You're listening to a Rig Train Masterclass, supported by the Radio Independence Group and Creative Skillset, independent training for the UK radio production industry.
So I mainly do live radio, I do music radio, but aside from that, you know, hopefully there'll be some clues in my experiences that'll kind of, you can draw something from. So aside from that approach, my approach is different because I'm an American living in London. And the other people that you're hearing from today, it's different because, well, they're not Americans living in London, but they're doing American radio. So I feel like I have a little bit of a different approach to that sort of thing. I never did radio in the US. It never even occurred to me to do radio at all. I moved to London. So and UK radio has always been my focus. But what has happened is that a lot of the shows that I've done have ended up getting an accidental audience in America. So maybe there's something that you can learn from that, hopefully. So I think that being American in London kind of gave me a USP. And I know that a lot of people talk about USP, like a unique selling point, but it turns out it's actually pretty important because I suddenly was like the American guy. And I wouldn't have the career that I have today had I stayed in America because, well, there's loads of Americans in America. There's loads of Americans in the UK as well, but not as many. So instantly I was different. So while I set out to do radio in the UK, and that was our core listenership, over the years we discovered that we had this really growing and diverse and kind of passionate culty American listenership that was happening like completely by accident. So let's start off with the Danny Baker Show. So this is the Danny Baker Show, and already you can see it's a little bit different than a normal radio studio. We decorate the studio all the time, even before we had cans, because it was more fun to do radio in. And that was it decorated for Easter. We got a big old Easter chick and all of that sort of stuff. Now, Danny's totally in love with America. He's often said that he should have been born in America, which is a bit shocking to some degree if you know anything about Danny Baker, because he is pretty much the poster child for a certain brand of working class Cockney Londoner. But that's a really simplistic view of him. He does holiday in Florida every single year. He's obsessed with American culture. He loves imitating American radio jocks on air. You mentioned the Florida Keys earlier. One of his favorites was 107.7 in the Florida Keys, where we keep it nice and keezy. that was one of our favorite ones to do. Now, before I got to Danny Baker, I had quite a jagged road to getting there, because my first job in the UK was I was hired to voice the trails for Sarah Cox on her Radio 1 breakfast program. And they hired me because I was American, and they really wanted an American sound. So I had to say lots of things like, it's a totally awesome new show, like every day. And I thought, okay, I can do this. I'm American. I've got this covered. I wove my way around, and I covered like a teddy bear exhibit at the Museum of Childhood. And I talked about diets with the lovely Vanessa Feltz. And I did a pirate festival, I think, at the Docklands. I did loads of things. And then at some point, Danny Baker's producer needed somebody to fill in for his co-presenter, and they had tried everybody in the office, and Danny's a little bit particular about what he likes, and he had said no to absolutely everybody, and I think as a last resort, she was like, how about you give it a go? So I went in, and Danny and I just hit it off, like completely, instantly. Maybe it was because I was American, and he's got this American thing, or maybe it was our sensibilities, whatever it was, it just completely worked. So I was made co-host, along with another American, Amy LeMay. And we set about having fun for 2 hours every day between 3 and 5. We had no script. We never planned it. We never had a meeting. We were never talked to by management. We got to the show usually during the news junction. That was the start of our show. That's usually when we all kind of piled in to the studio. And while I have huge respect for some of the people that we've heard from and will hear from, and some of you guys in the room, you know, I love This American Life and Audible, and I love podcasts, I love documentaries, and I listen to those things in absolute awe, because I just don't have that skill set, you know, and hopefully what I'm showing you is that there are different ways to make radio, because not everybody has the same skill set, and I couldn't make a documentary like Leo made if I tried. I've never tried, but I couldn't. It's just not what I do. So one of the things that I learned kind of doing this is that you've got to just do what you do. Now, back to the Danny Baker Show. I'm not sure that we actually aimed that show at anyone other than ourselves. You know, we did stuff like was mentioned, you know, what's been on your Nan's head. We did what's been on your head other than a hat, which started with this. We're kind of stacking things on our head. And then we did what's wrong with your foot? What part of your body's been purple? We did where have you worn shoes other than your foot? And that was inspired by this hat that we found in a studio. And that's what we would do. We would find things and we would just make radio. We would just go in and we would start off with what happened to you today. And suddenly we would have a two-hour show out of that. We would be lazy every now and again. We did this quite a bit where we would, oh, that's us dancing. Look, we would just dance. Before we had cams, we would dance for us. But we would get lazy every now and then, and we would put fire YouTube videos on all of the monitors in the whole studio, and we would ask everybody listening to do the same, because it would be Wednesday, and sometimes you just need a break. And so we kind of created this club where people really felt like they were a part of something. Now, once Twitter and Facebook kind of became a thing, we did stuff like highbrow above the eyebrow, which had listeners sending us pictures of really posh things balanced on their heads, so like really posh art books or crystal decanters or things like that. So it was another way to bring in kind of people and say you're a part of this club. You know, we're not talking to you, we're talking with you. Like we're a part of this thing together. So we did silly things just for us, but hoping that the audience would join along. So we would broadcast in life jackets when we did an airplane special. We decorated the studio just because it was more fun, like I mentioned earlier. And we would take the show out of the studio, which was, it sounds like a really simple idea, but A, you would be surprised at how much bureaucracy at the BBC goes in to taking your show out of the studio. But we did a big night at Hackney Empire where we had the entire BBC concert orchestra playing our beds in incidental music. And we had glitter cannons. So it was one of the kind of the highlights of doing that show. We tried to look at things a little bit differently. So we thought, I think it was Poetry Week. There's a lot of initiatives that come down through the BBC where it's like, oh, it's Poetry Week, so you have to do something about poetry. And so a lot of shows were doing it really po-faced and, you know, with really serious voices about poetry. And we were like, well, why can't you scream poetry? Why do we always do poetry in this soft kind of way? So we thought we should do poetry really, really loud. We should scream poetry at the top of our lungs. We should bellow it. And we should do it from really, really high places. So they sent me to the top of a crane in East London. It was the highest crane at the time, and we bellowed poetry from there. Sorry, these photos are a little bit me-focused, but those are the photos that I have. They took me to Zippo's Circus, and I had to learn how to do the Wheel of Death in about an hour. And then this is me in rehearsal. And then I had a change of outfit, and I did it for a paying crowd at Zippo's Circus, where I recited a poem about a clown. And that actually, while that was a YouTube thing, we didn't actually use any of the YouTube stuff. We just used the audio, but we did it because it was fun. Like, it just made something a little bit different. So that would take my bow. I was hugely successful in Zippo's Circus. So that's so you don't have to look at me for a little bit. So once Listen Again started and people could listen online, that's when we really noticed that it wasn't just people in the UK that were listening to us. We had this huge listenership in America. We'd kind of known we did because of emails and Facebook and things like that. But once the figures started coming in and they were showing us them, we thought, oh, God, we're kind of big in America. So we were kind of pleased with that. And I guess it started probably with expats, Brits who were living in America, and the word kind of spread out from there. But whatever it was, a lot of times we would have more listeners in America and Listening Again than we would actually have listening to the show go out live in London, which kind of blew our minds a little bit. So we tried to figure it out, and maybe it was a combination of two Americans with this really British guy kind of talking about their experiences of living in the UK, using British phrases, explaining kind of cultural references to each other. We don't really know what it was, but for some reason, it was interesting for Americans. And the point that I'm trying to make with that is that we didn't try to make radio for America. We just tried to make good radio, and we tried to have fun with it. And we did what we liked, and for some reason, other people liked it. And maybe because we created this club, it meant that if you became a member of that club in whatever way, that you stuck with us and you told your friends, and we suddenly had this big kind of American audience. So I guess the main thing that I learned from doing that was just to do what you do and to do it well, and the audience will follow. So you may or may not know that the Danny Baker Show ended in a huge on-air fireball that made the front page of the Times before a two-hour rant that Danny had against BBC management. That was one of the best shows I've ever done in my life. They actually told him that they were going to take us off air and then let him go on air, which kind of says something about the power of Danny Baker. But anyway, so that show ended, and I found myself a bit lost for a little bit, because for over a decade, that show had been my complete identity, really, in terms of a professional world. You know, that was my job. It was also, it was almost like a family as well. You know, I spent 5 days a week with these people doing radio, and we always ended up in the pub afterwards. And so I floundered around for a little bit, and I went back to that thing that I was talking about earlier, which was your identity. And because I was from Tennessee, and that was kind of what I'd always been identified as being here, and that's what made me different, and I had this background in country music, I started doing country music radio for Amazing Radio, it's called, which is a new and emerging station. Now, the thing is, had I stayed in America, I could never have done a country music radio show, because in America, there's hundreds, probably thousands, of country music radio shows. They mainly play the same song, but still, there's loads of them there. But the reason I could do it here was because I was from there, and I was doing country music, and I had kind of this innate knowledge of it already, and people believed me. And so believability became a really big thing in terms of my career. What I learned from working with Danny and from doing all this is that I didn't try and fit in. Like, I as an American who moved here, there was an inclination to try and make what people wanted me to make. And I would assume as UK producers and people who work in this field, that if you're trying to sell something back to America, there's probably a feeling that you have to fit into their box. And that might be true to some degree, but ultimately what people are looking for is something a little bit different. They're looking for your perspective. They're looking for something that they can't get in America. I mean, they already love your accent, so you're like way ahead already, you know. So I think it's just, you know, find your USP. Glorious America can be yours, but you don't have to try and do what they think you should do, because you already know really probably what it is that you do best. And if you do that, they're going to want it. So just make people feel like they're a part of a club. And if everything else fails, you can always do a show about what your nan's had on her head. America's always loved Britain. When I first moved here, I thought it worked the other way, too. I thought it was going to love you. I'm American. It turns out that just didn't work that way. George Bush had just been elected, so it was a double whammy. But I do actually really think that that is a real leg up that you guys have. And it's something that you should really use, is like your British accent, your British perspective, or even if you're not born British, you know, the fact that you're from here, you have this perspective.
You've been listening to a Rig Train Masterclass, supported by the Radio Independence Group and Creative Skillset, independent training for the UK radio production industry.